Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers. And today, it feels like it's Christmas early. With me, I have Mayur Vichare, our Director of Value Consulting. Mayur, it's so good to have you here on the show.
Thanks, Tim. Glad to be back with you.
Finally. It's been ages. No, it's great to see you here, Mayur. Maybe for a little bit of context, Mayur is looking after a very special team in Backbase, I would say. Maybe you can introduce yourself and give a bit of color.
Yeah, sure. We have been conceptualizing this team for 3 to 4 years now, and we have built a strategic consulting or value consulting advisory arm for Backbase. The objective is very clear. You know, how do we help our prospects and clients to define more value-based roadmaps, business cases, value propositions if they are going with a new offering to the market, and we do it as a very pragmatic way, so that it's also executable and not just, you know, slideware.
All right. So it's not just slide decks that you're delivering. No. Okay. Let's double click on that as we go along. You've also been in Backbase for quite a while, right? And in this space for quite a while.
Yes. So I think with Backbase for more than 6 years now, but in the space also for 14 years across the banking sector. And it has been quite a different kind of feeling, because when I started my career, business intelligence was coming up, and you know, it was quite a big thing, digital. Then we had something called a SMAC, social media analytics cloud. That's what we used to call digital 2.0, and now we are going into digital 4.0 with, you know, generative AI and so on and so forth. So the industry is going through all different kinds of waves, as we call it. Now we will, of course, know, you know, how much of it is hype cycle, and you know, what is real and what is not. But we do also see good progress, especially in the last 4 to 5 years. The change is coming up, and the change is really being implemented in a good way, barring a few elements which we will discuss as we go.
Yeah, maybe to kick off the meaty part of the episode, we spoke earlier over a nice cup of coffee, and you mentioned that there have been a few waves of digitization or transformation. Maybe you can give the introduction also to the audience, how you look at the world over the past, let's say, is it 10, 15 years, give or take?
Yes, so 10, 15 years. Again, digitalization in general has been happening. Again, we could also call ATM as a part of digitalization, sure. Right? So it's not something which is new. It has already happened for the last 30 years, much before even we all started our careers, probably in banking, etc. The wave is different from then to now, because the way we look at digitalization has changed over time. The way we are it is not just being digitalization, it's really transformation, as we call it, right? It's more digital transformation than digitalization. We have been speaking about this for at least 5 years now. The element, though, is in most of the situations that we have seen across the industry, the value that you're getting from these initiatives, it's not up to the mark yet. So if you see the IT spend on all the digital transformation efforts that are done, or digitalization efforts that are done, it's massive. So if you see the IT spend as a percentage of OPEX, IT spend as a percentage of revenue, it has been going up. And it is, to a large degree across the globe, it's up. To an extent where we do see, you know, 12 to 14% of a percentage of revenue IT being spent. But if you see the corresponding value that you're getting out of it from revenue per employee and income per employee, we normally take these two metrics. The impact is not the same. And there's also a stark difference between the leaders where, you know, they are actually performing at €1 million per revenue per employee versus negative or 170 or 180K. At the laggards. So the spend is high, but the value is, you know, the difference between the value delivered by the leaders and the laggards is massive. And there are multiple reasons behind it, but it's also to do because the mindset of the transformation has been very product-centric, has been very LOB-centric, you know, and that also has stunted the transformation speed. The speed that they would have gone and the value that they would have delivered would have been much more if that thinking would have translated more from what we call as platform-centric thinking, from a product-centric thinking, which is a bit inside out and thinking about your own LOB or own silos. And of course, you know, as you see also from an organization standpoint, the change has also been big. You see that, you know, banks, financial institutions hiring CDOs, chief digital officers to run these initiatives across LOBs. However, the silo still remains to a large extent. And that's also the reason why we think that while you have hired a chief digital officer, the chief executive officer should be accountable equally for the digital transformation effort to break through all the silos and to break through all the small initiatives which are not value-driven, but which are driven to solve a specific smaller problem in nature.
If I may, Mayur, it all resonates. And yes, there have been multiple waves of transformation. You mentioned that there's a stark difference. Like you use strong words, stark difference, where revenue per employee could be, let's say, up to $1 million, which is the leader, let's say, level, versus those that are maybe even making a negative return to a degree. Mm-hmm. What is that difference? Where does it come from?
Well, it comes from multiple points. Like I said, one of them is the thinking and transformation happening at a certain line of business level, which is not scalable. So I would say it is more to do with solving a specific problem with a specific solution and not thinking scale, which is unfortunate, because then, you know, you are not able to scale the initiative across different products and lines of businesses. That's one. But if you just take one step back and if you zoom out, why does this happen? This happens because the way financial institution organizations were built, in the long run, they have not really changed their operating models. The operating model largely remains the same. And then your IT or your digital transformation efforts are also following that organization structure, like what Conway's law says, right? That your IT systems and architecture is actually replicating the behavior and the communication lines that you set for the organization.
The other way around.
The systems drive the behavior of the organization. So it's just a circle. It's just a vicious cycle in a way.
Okay, so it's really about platform thinking, moving away from the product-centric view, which is more inside out. I think that's very clear. We discuss it in many of the episodes, also with the customers that we have in the episodes as of late. Now, there's also the other perspective, perhaps, where banks have been doing well. They are growing, especially the past few years. They are almost on a supercharged growth track. So what is the real issue here, Mayur?
Well, banks have been growing, no doubt, but look at the reasons why they have grown. Personally, and also if you read the Global Annual Banking Reviews by McKinsey and likes of BCG Bain, the reports that have been put out, if you see them, they're also saying the same, that this growth has been quite... They have not been mentioning this word, but this is my word. It's kind of fake.
It's fake growth.
Yeah, it's kind of a fake growth because it's driven by mortgage interest rates, which we knew that will stabilize towards 6% going forward. And then the growth is not going to be real. Now, to sustain the growth that you have today, you will have to cut cost 2 to 3x or even more to have the same growth that you have today, which is going to be almost impossible because the cost-cutting initiatives have already been happening. You know, the branch footprint reduction has already been happening. So that takes us to, and of course, there's a laggards, you know, who will still be laggards and, you know, who are going to be adopting, or going to be trying to catching up, kind of a thing. And then like we said, you know, there's stark difference between the leaders and the laggards, right? the leaders are actually moving into more focused segments, you know, and they are thinking, how can I drive value out of the high value segments and keep the cost to serve less with the, you know, with the low value segments, right? And typical, you know, going with wealth banking, etc. The digital transformation efforts will happen in the wealth banking, no doubt, and it's happening already. But there, the effort is more towards, how do I empower my relationship manager, you know, to have more revenue, driving more revenue per employee. And in the retail segment, it'll go more towards cost to serve, you know, and how do we keep, how do we help transformation at scale? How do we help, you know, achieve personalization at scale while maintaining the cost to serve? So that's one element of it. The second element, as we have been speaking about this in all our podcasts, and you can see it, early use cases of generative AI coming in and, you know, hitting the market. And I think already since 2022, the leaders were already, you know, having small labs, you know, they were already, you know, implementing it. We saw that with so many patents been filed already for generative AI. A lot of use cases still around cost and fraud management, etc. But we will see also on the engagement banking side, how do you drive engagement and behavior of customers to improve your share of wallet? How do you drive and empower your RMs with use cases using generative AI so that, you know, they can propose the right, the next best product and the right product bundle to their to their customers? So this is the second piece, which is as a thing that will set further the leaders and the laggards apart. And the third piece is a very composable kind of thinking towards your architecture. And that's a very important thing. We have been speaking about this also for many years by now. And composable is not architecture. Composable is a thinking which leads to a composable architecture.
So it's conceptual thinking, most conceptual, like thinking a composable pattern.
Yeah, and which is kind of driven with three things, right? Modular thinking, every component is autonomous and is discoverable. These are the three elements of that. And that is applied at a business model level. So you need to think all the way from the business model to the architecture. And that thinking has to be applied at all levels, which also brings to the next topic. How do you, as an architect, you know, or how do you, if you're an enterprise architecture team or your CTO team, how do you ensure that, you know, this composability comes into play? Because business wants to move fast, and, you know, architects, there's always this kind of a complaint, like, yeah, we are never happy with the time to market or the speed that we are going to get from, you know, from our IT teams, etc. The role of your CTO and the role of your enterprise architects will also change. They will have to shift left in a more strategic role, more of an internal management consulting kind of a role than the execution roles that they were assuming for the past decade or two decades, right? If you see, most of the CIOs in the past were focused on keeping the lights on, you know, and IT being a support staff. The change will also happen from that angle, where the enterprise architects will become more business outcome driven CTOs and business outcome driven enterprise architects, which will drive the composable thinking in the architecture. Unfortunately, sometimes we do see that they are so much away from the strategy that the architecture built is so siloed in nature, and it's not composable, and therefore not reusable. And that's where your revenue per employee and income per employee goes for a toss. And therefore, you're not able to execute faster.
Yeah. So if I hear you correctly, then there are leaders, there are laggards. Yes, there is, to a degree, fake growth. Like, the banks are doing well, the growth is there, but there will be a moment where you need to make savings to sustain the growth.
Yes, massive.
So that really comes to the cost-income ratio, which is also heavily impacted by your IT investments overall, as well as the personnel, the employees that come with it, just to, you know, keep the lights running.
Correct.
Where you do expect not just an efficiency gain, which certainly is going to be accelerated with the AI wave that is now coming in, and there's all these different programs that are running to transform the way the bank operates and the way the bank works with AI capabilities. Where you do want to generate top-line growth is actually where everything meets.
Yes.
Right? And if you're not organized well, and if your architecture is also not organized well to allow for composable thinking and actual composable architectural patterns, you're basically in a sort of a deadlock. Like, you cannot make the progress that you're looking to make anymore. Is that a good summary of what you're trying to say?
Absolutely, yes. And the most important thing, it is a deadlock, but it's also just at some point you realize that, okay, now we need to change. And that change comes amidst the transformation, and then you're already thrown 2 years back.
It's too late.
It's too late. And then you have to re-architect everything, and it takes too long, and so on and so forth, right? And that is something that executives have to realize now, that composable thinking needs to apply all the way from the business model to the architecture. And that is important that you have your CTOs and your enterprise architects part of your strategy rather than just thinking of them as executioners.
Yeah. I think that's a key insight, that you're basically saying this whole function of IT is not execution only and the support function or the staff that just does whatever they're being told to do. Mm-hmm. They're actually the strategic advisor on how to make technology work for you, given the business model that you have. Now, do you already see this in practice? Because theoretically, it sounds fantastic, but in reality, how does that really work in the boardrooms? How does it work in the typical day-to-day of a given bank?
We do see it in practice. Like I said, the CDO was kind of the role that came up for doing the digital transformation across LOBs. CTO also have a position. It's, however, nuanced. How much leeway and power do they have in decision-making? And how are they perceived to really bring business model transformation? That nuance is very important. More often, they have a seat, but they don't have a massive say. Mm-hmm. More often, they also, when the board meetings happen, they are again, ROIs and business cases that are asked for, which impedes long-term thinking and prioritizes short-term thinking. Let me give you an example. We have two banks in a similar situation, one in Europe and one in Asia. Both banks were actually trying to see what initiatives to prioritize. And the initiative that were on the table were, one of them was interactive teller machine, second was co-banking, and third one was channels and API upgrade in the ESB layer. Can you imagine what they prioritized?
Is it a trick question?
It is kind of a trick question. But it was a bit startling to see that the prioritization was actually given to interactive teller machine because it gave immediate return and, short-term return was higher. We actually had to go and explain them that the other two initiatives would have given you much more return, especially the channel upgrade with the API, than the interactive teller machine. That's something which is unfortunately how thinking happens. Now, when I speak to executives, they say that, no, we need to do all the three, which calls for a higher budget and a split of budget for change initiatives and for run initiatives. And that's also the issue. We call even normal transformation efforts like core banking upgrade as a change initiative. It's actually not a change initiative. It is still a run initiative. The change initiative is only when you're transforming something. You're bringing something new to the market. You're bringing new value proposition to the market, right? You're entering a new market. That is a change initiative. And we often confuse these budgets with run and change, which then goes into nitpicking on short-term initiatives and long-term thinking of how can I re-architect for the future, for the next 3 to 5 years or for the next 10 years, because Gen AI is coming. Do I have a proper composable microservices architecture across the board? Am I going to be able to leverage all the new technologies? That never happens. And then the CTO has to take a call. Okay, you know what? I have these three. Let's just go with what the business is asking, interactive teller machine it is. And then we will think of core, and then we will think of channel and API, because I have to keep the lights on and I have to, keep the boardroom happy.
Clear. Would you say that this is due to, let's say, limited ambition? Or is it mostly just protecting the seat to a degree? As in, let me score in year with certain programs that will yield so I can clearly, capture the yield and say, hey, this is what I and my group were able to deliver. Versus actually being a bit more, let's say, truly ambitious and saying, hey, in the coming 2 to 3 years, we're going to go on a journey. We might initially see a dip in a few of the initiatives that we're not going to be picking up, meaning you're not going to get that initial short-term return. but we're going to go for a bit of a higher risk motion here. Yeah. We're going to move into, let's say, a platform. We're going to start with
a foundation,
fixing, onboarding, and commercial, because those types of customers are high value. So you also put segment-based thinking more in line with the actual decision. Mm-hmm. Like, where is this disconnect, if I may ask?
There are two problems. One, there are ambitious CTOs, but then they are mired by low budgets. In cases where the budget is, before I go there, like if you go throughout the industry, even if, like I said in the beginning of the podcast, the cost or the IT cost has gone up, across the industry, across different industries, including, you know, food and beverage, retail, etc., banking and financial services spends the most. But if you see retail or other industries, they're far ahead in transformation. Like e-commerce came, 8 years back or 10 years back. Why? Because in most of the cases of the spend of the budget is going into regulatory, is going into, you know, keeping the lights on, legacy systems, and so on and so forth. So the spend is high in comparison to other industries, but it's going into different angles. Now, what happens when you see these kind of numbers? The CTO, even if they're ambitious, they're not able to go and prove to the board why this is the most important thing to be done now. They don't have, a lot of times we don't see proper metrics being laid out by the CTO to explain the business value of IT, the business value of this transformation effort that's going to land. And then they become ultimately followers to what business is telling them to do, which is, like I said, interactive telemachine, which is probably 10 to 15 years back kind of a thing. Second, a lot of CTOs, unfortunately, then are not bold enough to go and ask for this budget because they don't have a proper reasoning behind what is the value that I'm going to deliver with this. This is one cohort of CTOs. The second cohort of CTOs are mostly less ambitious in a way. And they're happy with the old legacy mainframe systems that they have been maintaining. And they are not thinking that, you know, how am I going to transform the bank in the next 5 years? We always ask a lot of our CTOs, you know, what is the kind of legacy that you want to leave behind for your for this bank when you leave? What is the kind of legacy? Exactly, no pun intended. It's not a legacy technology, we hope, but it's something that is, you know, going to really move the business value. So you're absolutely right. You know, one cohort of CTOs are less ambitious in nature, and then one cohort of CTOs are ambitious but don't have the right reasoning, and so then they are just, you know, set back and are going and following with the with what business asks them to deliver.
And that's exactly where typically you and your team come in to basically help and guide the conversation and bring data points to the table.
Yeah.
We're going to go to a few key takeaways, Mayur. There's a lot more that we need to discuss, so I'm going to invite you a few more times in the coming period.
Sure, yeah.
But overall, we were discussing how do banks actually generate value in this day and age, while at the same time, they're currently growing. So currently, they are wildly profitable, which you coined as fake growth to a degree, given the mortgage interest rates that they're basically capturing on the P&L. But nevertheless, you made the statement they need to go for significant savings to sustain the growth, which I think is a very fair point. That's also what the big strategy advisory reports are indicating. And we unpacked a little bit what sets apart good from great, or leaders from laggards. And if I may summarize you to a degree, it basically looks after an ambitious CTO that not just has the ambition, but also the budget. If the budget isn't there, it's basically being also there ambitious to actually go to the table with a very clear business case and ROI and KPIs to make progress.
Yep.
So in a way, that type of CTO, CIO, CDO is educating the boardroom on how to make progress, where technology is an enabler, like full-blown strategic enabler versus just where things are being built and maintained.
Exactly. And IT is sitting back and, you know, saying that we are just going to keep the lights on.
Exactly. So, yeah, to summarize this conversation, I believe it really comes to the flywheel, where both the business leader as well as the technology leader are really in sync and aligned, which means you will have to go through maybe one more round of transformation to truly unpack whatever is holding you back today.
Yeah.
And I think there the guidance that you've given is be ambitious, have the business case, and go for platform thinking. Okay. So move away from the product-centric thinking because it's going to give you the exact same of what you have seen over the past few decades. Right. It will not set you apart, and it will not give you those savings that you're looking for, nor revenue growth.
Nor the revenue per employee benchmark that we discussed. Exactly.
Any final things you would like to highlight or add, Mayur?
No, I think you summarized it perfect. You know, thinking, moving from product-centric to platform-centric thinking, having a more composable, having a most one thing that I think is critical, having the enterprise architecture and the CTO team involved from the strategy, strategic discussions angle, so that they're not just executioners, and then having the right CTOs with the right budget, with the right segregation of run and change. So yeah, you nailed it.
We have many more things to unpack. There's big concepts here at the table that we discussed.
Yes.
We only had 30 minutes, give or take. So we're going to close this episode. I'm going to invite you back very soon, Mayur. Thanks for spending time with us.
Looking forward. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.